All right, hi everybody, and welcome to lecture 35 in this ancient history program of History at Our House for the elementary class. We're now going to start looking specifically at the story of ancient Greece, and we need to get kind of oriented to what Greece is like. It's a new kind of place. If we compare it to Egypt and Mesopotamia in particular, we're going to notice that it is definitely different from those two. It's definitely different from the types of places that normally the earliest civilizations arose. And one of the things that is important about ancient Greece in terms of its geography, which helps to explain some things about its history, is that unlike Egypt and Mesopotamia, it does not have one of those great rivers. So there is no Nile, right, in ancient Egypt. There is no Tigris or Euphrates to make a kind of wonderful environment for people to live in. So life in Greece was rough. It was tough. It was hard. So it was, I guess, that we can probably understand why maybe for that reason it took longer for the Greeks to create a civilization. But can you imagine perhaps that might also be an advantage? I mean, we know that in archaic life, right, human beings needed an awful lot of help from nature to be able to make their start, right? And the Greeks didn't get that help. So since they didn't get that help, can you think of a way in which that would actually be positive? It's kind of a tricky thing, right? I mean, if you think about your own life and the times when your parents support you and help you to do things, but then on the other hand, sometimes they insist that you learn to do it yourself, right? And you grow more from that. Can you think of how this kind of applies in a way? And we, you know, when we talk about Mother Nature, Mother Nature was not very nice to the Greeks. So what did that do to them, or what did that kind of force them to do? See the connection? Rosetta?
To be more resourceful.
Yeah, good word, resourceful. Yeah, to be the kind of people that know how to take care of themselves, right? To grow up and get tough and be stronger, because nature is not going to take care of you. You don't get this nice situation where the river gives you what you need. Instead, you have got to figure out a way to make life work even without all of the nice things that nature would provide. So what is, if we look at this shape of Greece here, it's not necessarily obvious what Greece was like, although we can see a kind of hint here. We can see a river here that's going this way, and we can see a river here that's going that way, and a river here that goes this way, and a river here that goes that way. How come we've got rivers that are going off in all directions? We got a small river that goes this way, and one that goes this way, and then one that goes down this way. How come we got rivers going off in all directions? Especially in an area that's pretty small. Okay, this is the map that we're looking at here is the territory we're looking at. It's about the size of an American state, you know, not much more than that. So how come there's so many small rivers? What makes that happen, rather than, you know, kind of one big river, or maybe a couple big rivers or something like that? What leads to, you know, having different kinds of rivers? Anybody know? The terrain of Greece was, or is, because it hasn't ceased to be, it's mountainous. Okay, so that is a feature of Greek geography that is important to understand. There were a lot of mountains. Okay, so that's one of the features that's going to help us to understand life in ancient Greece. There's one other feature of the geography that you can see right here on this map that is important to Greek life. If you got a lot of mountains, think about this. If you have a lot of mountains and you have a bunch of separate streams and not really one big river, can you guys think about how that would lead to a little bit of a different history? Remember how Egyptian history goes in particular. You got people on one end of the river joining up with people on the other end of the river. Pretty much how it happened in Sumer and Akkad as well. So, what about Greece? No river up and down the country. So, and you got a lot of mountains. How's that going to change the way that people live? Got a bunch of different mountain ranges. What if you're inside one of those valleys? What's your connection to other people? Nowadays, we have all this technology, so we don't necessarily feel so isolated from others just because of mountains or things like that, right? But what would it be like to live in a place where the whole area is divided up into valleys by tall mountains? Can you get, I'll ask you this question, I think Rosetta's onto this here, but can you get a Menes Narmer in a situation like that? Why not? I guess I gave it away. I said, why not? Well, let me put it to you that way then. Why can't you get a Menes Narmer in a situation like that? Or what makes it really hard for there to be a Menes Narmer in a story of a place like Greece? In a country full of mountains. Rosetta, go ahead.
Because it wouldn't really happen, or it'd be really hard to happen, because it's so isolated from other people. Like, they're so isolated from each other that to go across the mountains and everything like that, it would be really hard.
Yeah, okay, now you're on to it, right? How do you unify a country that's full of mountains? Right, if you want to put a country together, you want to be a Menes Narmer, what are you going to have to do? If you're living in one part of the country and you want to go to another part of the country and bring it under your control, what are you going to have to do? If you go by land, I'm sure given lots of hints today. If you go by land, you're going to have to go over mountains, right? Is that easy to do? I mean, climbing mountains, even if you're just one person, you know, mountain climbing is quite a difficult task. What about whole armies? Do whole armies cross mountains regularly in history? Anybody think of a famous... There's some pretty famous stories in history of generals who actually did manage to send their armies over mountains. And guess why they're famous? Because it's super hard to do. Rosetta, go ahead again. Well, you were probably trying to say something earlier, and I just kept on going and going. All right, so, but let me lead you here to the next part of Greek geography that you need to understand to get the history. One part, one of the features is mountains, okay? But you can see the other feature. If you're going to try to go from one place to another, mountains is not such a great way to do it. But can you see another way on this map? Can you see another way to get from one place to another? Patrick?
Rivers?
No, we already said that there's not one river that you can use to get anywhere, right? There's a bunch of separate rivers in separate valleys. So that's not a way to get around. So how are you going to get around? No, I think I only have one person who's ready to unify Greece here. Rosetta, go ahead.
They would have to go around the... they would have to get a boat out into the ocean to go around the country.
Yeah, use the sea. Use the sea. Look at this place. Look at all this coastline. Look where all the cities are. They're all along the coast. Very rarely some of them aren't, but they're very close to the coast. Why? Because, well, where are you going to go, right? And you got a lot of islands and different cities on islands and so on. But if you look along, I mean, there's not... Where are all the cities here? Right? They're not in the middle of the land. This is a mountain range here called the Pindus Range. Right? They're not on land. They're closer to the sea because the best way to get around... in a situation like that is by sea. All right, so those are the two features of Greek geography that have some important kind of, let's say, consequences for its history later. We'll come back to them. So we got the mountains and the sea, and we can see that the Greeks had cities in different parts of this one right here, the Aegean Sea. Guaranteed, that's going to be a bonus question or something having to do, and you're going to have to get the spelling right. Is it easy to spell? No. So watch for the spelling. Aegean Sea is pretty weird. In a lot of different parts of Greece, we see kind of A's in story of Greece. We see a lot of A's and E's put together like this. Pretty awkward sometimes. And we have a lot of places in Greece that have names that are pretty hard to pronounce. Okay? And so let's just zoom in a little bit here because you can't necessarily see where everything is. And if you haven't done Greek geography yet, it's going to be good for you to just kind of pinpoint something. So here, if I zoom in, can everybody see now where the most important city of Greece is? We know what it is, right? There it is. Right? Athens. Hopefully you guys can read that. Let me know if you can't. Right? I'm just zooming in a little bit here to make it easier to read. I will definitely post this map onto the class webpage so that you can have it on your screen and you can zoom and do as much with it as you want, because pretty much all of the important locations in Greece at any point in time are on here. So they're not all important at the same time, but pretty much every location that ever was important in Greek history is on here. And Athens, of course, is number one. But the thing is, we can't just study Athens. If we're thinking about democracy and we're thinking about how human beings got past the archaic plateau, then it's the Athenians that we want to spend the most amount of time on. But the thing is about Greece is that a city like Athens was not just one city within a country. This is another thing that's a little bit hard to understand about Greek history and how it's quite different from Egyptian and Mesopotamian history. In Greek history, partly because of the geography, partly because you could not get a Menes Narmer in this kind of mountainous area, okay? Each one of these cities was basically its own country. Each one of these cities was basically its own country, which is pretty strange. So today, right, let's see here. Opal, you live in New Orleans, right? Or nearby? Hello?
Yes.
Oh, okay, right. So, in other words, that's a city, right? And it's within a state, Louisiana, right? And it's within the country of the United States. Okay. So, and Rosetta, what big city do you live nearby?
I live in Los Angeles.
Okay, near Los Angeles, right? So, then we have New Orleans and Los Angeles. Well, now imagine a country of the United States in which Los Angeles is a country and New Orleans is a country. These aren't cities that are a part of the United States, but rather they are their own country. And they are not just rivals in sports, but they go to war with each other. So, I mean, obviously Los Angeles and New Orleans, that'd be pretty far apart. But, you know, if Opal is in New Orleans we have somebody else in the class who perhaps is in, let's say, Montgomery, Alabama, that's pretty close by. These are cities that are going to be at war with each other. They're going to be rivals. They're not going to be in the same country. They're going to be separate countries. So we have a word for that to capture the idea of a city that is its own country. And so it's a hyphenated expression. I'm going to put it in the chat box. It is the word city-state. City-state. You might kind of expect that we would say city-country, right? Because it's a city that is its own country. And that's one of the things that probably young students of geography find confusing about the United States as well. What's the difference between a state and a country? And it always seems to be kind of hard to sort that out in different situations. Because in some ways, each of the various states in America, they sometimes behave almost like separate countries. Certainly they did early on. But then they were joined together in a single country. So the word state is kind of a tricky word. It means one thing inside the United States. But then sometimes in other situations, it's a synonym for the word country. And it's just, I think it's confusing. I think most people think it's confusing. But it's just the way that it is. So Athens was a city-state. And the other places that you see labeled on here were also city-states. All right, typically independent countries. And as we're going to see, they did not get along with each other particularly well. It was quite hard for them to kind of unite. And we're going to see there was really only one thing that ever made them work together. Anybody know what it was? Maybe I'll give it away. Maybe I won't. Rosetta, put your hand down. You're going to try to answer it? Because Rosetta might be able to guess. Go ahead.
Wasn't it the fight between I'm not sure if it was Mesopotamia or Persia that tried to attack them?
Yeah, so what do we call that when these city-states that are usually enemies then become, you know, united because they have a common enemy? Right? We have that strange situation that is the enemy of my enemy is my temporary ally. We'll see that about the Greeks, is that they were usually not very nice to each other. And didn't like each other, and they often were at war with each other. And this was part of the rough life of ancient Greece. They were not very friendly towards each other, but that made them tough. And that was one of the things that made them tough. But they were all Greek, and they did feel a certain connection to each other. And so what was that? What was that connection that they had to each other? Well, the history of Greece, like I said, is not unified. So we don't get to start at a moment where there's a Menes and Narmer and everybody is in one country all of a sudden. We don't get that. Instead, what we get is different parts of Greece kind of popping up out of prehistory and kind of showing up, and everybody says, hey, look at that. There's a little part of Greece there. And they're doing something interesting. And then it disappears. And then another little part of Greece pops up and becomes interesting and then disappears. And it takes a while for ancient Greece to really kind of show up and permanently be a part of history. So it is a confusing story in a way, and we're not going to spend an awful lot of time on the really, really early part, but I'll tell you just a little bit of the background that you might have heard of before. There might be some names here that are useful for you to know. So the earliest Greeks, who were they, where were they, what did they do? We don't know an awful lot. The earliest Greeks in history lived on the island of Crete. So I scroll down here just so you could see the island of Crete and its city Knossos down here. Those Greeks were known as the Minoans. So I'm going to go ahead and type that in. And the reason I mention them is because the Minoans are the kind of earliest Greeks to ever have contact with the other people that we know about so far, right? So if we want to try to make connections between early Greece and Egypt and Mesopotamia, the Minoans are the only ones that are going to give us that connection, because archaeologists have found stuff that the Minoans used to make in Egypt. And they found stuff that was made in Egypt in Crete. So what does that tell us about those two peoples?
Sorry.
That's okay. What were they doing with each other? Opal, go ahead.
Trading?
Yeah, they were trading with each other. So the Minoans had gotten to the point where they were advanced enough to be trading with the Egyptians, and they actually had a language as well and an early form of writing. The problem is we can't read it. There's not enough of it, and we don't really know how to make sense of it. So the Minoans had a language that that historians call Linear A. I'll explain why in a second, why they call it that. But we can't read it. We don't have enough information to make sense of their story. So they kind of pop up here and there in the story of ancient Egypt or Mesopotamia, but we don't know anything else about them. Opal, Rosetta, put your hands down for a second, please. And then they disappeared. So the Minoans don't really get us very far. We know that they were there, and it's interesting they were there, maybe about 2000 BC, or maybe as early as when the pyramids were being built. We just don't know much about them. And then they disappeared. And then they were conquered by another people that came along and became a little bit more famous than them. The second group of people of Greeks that came along are known as the Mycenaeans. There's another hard spelling word for sure in ancient Greek history. And if you look on the map, I'm going to highlight where Mycenae was in the very ancient part of Greece. I'll put a little rectangle around it. There's Mycenae. Okay? Mycenaeans come along, they conquer the Minoans, and the Mycenaeans do something else that's pretty fascinating. Look up here in the very, very top of the map. The Mycenaeans conquered this place. Anybody heard of it? Patrick?
Yeah, I have in this story, the Trojan War.
The Trojan War, Troy, very good. The Mycenaeans, those characters in the Trojan War, such as Agamemnon, and who else? What are those great Greek heroes? Do you remember some of the names of the Greek heroes that are in the Trojan War?
I do remember one thing.
Yeah?
That there was a big wooden horse.
Okay, don't tell too much about that, because that's a famous story of the Trojan horse. And if not everybody knows it, then they should read the story themselves. But who are some of those other great heroes of the Mycenaeans who attract the Trojans, Rosetta?
Odysseus
is one of them, yes. There's a great story told about him. And there is another great... Who is the greatest of the warriors who fought the Trojans? He had a weakness, became kind of famous. Henry Wyatt?
Achilles!
Achilles, yes, exactly. And then there were other great warriors like Ajax and Odysseus and Patroclus and others that are quite amazing warriors. So yeah, those are some great stories. And so if you haven't read about the Trojan War yet, that is not quite history. That's right on the cusp before Greece really kind of becomes historical. The Greeks loved the story of the Trojan War. They had a famous storyteller. His name was Homer. Here's a painting of Homer and other Greek storytellers. I've done this one in History Through Art before. So we're not going to do it this year, but I thought I'd show you the painting anyway. It's kind of a neat one. Here's Homer, and Greek poets and storytellers would come to various places. Here we have this kind of Greek temple, right, and a settlement, and people are stopping from their work. You can see that they've got the wheat that they've collected and so on, and they're all sitting in the shadow of the tree, and this bard or poet or storyteller is seated there, and he has an instrument to make a little bit of music as part of his story, and then he tells the great stories of the ancient Greek heroes. And so the Mycenaeans, Achilles and Odysseus and others like them, were considered the great heroic ancestors of the Greeks. And each of the different city-states kind of had its own ancient heroes. Some of them were connected to the Trojan War. Some of them were from way before. And so everybody had kind of their own. And it's pretty neat when you study about ancient Greece, you can learn about some of these ancient heroes. The Mycenaeans had their legends about a hero called Perseus. If you've ever read about the stories of Perseus, that can be really exciting. And he had to fight a mythical creature called Medusa. And then the Athenians had a mythical hero called Theseus, and he had to fight a creature called the Minotaur. There's so many exciting stories that were told about the ancient heroes of the various cities. And the reason why the Greeks kind of told those stories was because, well, they didn't have any history yet. They weren't really clear on what had happened. And they knew that there had been other Greeks before them, and they enjoyed these stories, and they wanted to feel like they themselves were descended from heroic warriors and people and really strong people that they could admire. And so they told each other these stories. And that was another part of what the Greeks were like. They enjoyed these stories of these human heroes, their own ancestors, and they felt rather heroic about themselves. And so this is another part of the story of ancient Greece. Just before it gets into history, we have the Mycenaeans, we have the Trojan War, and then came another dark age. So like I said, first you got the Minoans, they pop up and then disappear. The Mycenaeans conquer them. Then the Mycenaeans pop up for a bit, and we have some fun stories about them, like the Trojan War. But then they also are conquered. And we get finally to people that are going to be a part of history. We get to basically two sets of people. The people that are left over after the Mycenaeans, they are called the Ionians. And that includes Athens. And then we have the people that conquered the Mycenaeans and made a heck of a mess. And they didn't like each other much. And they include the people of Sparta, another important and famous Greek city-state right here that I'm circling here. So there's a lot of background story here to the story kind of getting started at all. But these are some of the names that we're going to be hearing, so we kind of have to get familiar with them just a little bit. And I just want to tell you the first event from history that shows that they became connected to each other. So even though the Dorians had conquered much of Greece and destroyed Mycenae, and had made a heck of a mess, and the other Greeks, in particular the Ionians, didn't like them. They all did kind of get together about every 4 years, as it turns out, and they would have a religious festival that they would celebrate in common. And that religious festival was held at a place called Olympia. Can anybody guess what it was called? Whoops, I didn't mean to put a cross through it. That was the wrong symbol. I meant to put a box around it. But there it is. The festival was held at a place called Olympia. What was it called? That wasn't enough of a hint. Oh, wait. Wyatt might get it.
Olympics.
The Olympics. Yes, the Olympics were a religious and an athletic festival that the Greeks held every 4 years to celebrate their common culture. Even though they didn't always like each other, and oftentimes they were at war with each other, even if they were fighting wars, every 4 years they would have what was called a sacred truce, a kind of religious agreement that said no matter what we're doing, no matter how much we hate each other, every 4 years we're going to stop. We're not going to fight. We're not going to have any war. We're going to send our best athletes to Olympia, and we're going to have a festival to celebrate the fact that we are the Greeks. We believe in many of the same things, such as the god Zeus and some of these other great gods. We're going to celebrate them in our religious festival, and we believe in how great we are as the Greeks. So we're going to take our athletes and we're going to pit them against each other and have great contests. So here's what we're going to use as a symbol of the Olympic Games. Would be, there's a lot of art that the Greeks created. So this is a symbol of Greek athletes running a race, right? The very first Olympic Games, as it turns out, is the moment finally when the Greeks really step into history. Finally, once and for all, right? Because we had the Minoans, they came, they went. We had the Mycenaeans, they came, they went. Didn't add up to much. It's too bad, but really we only get the Greeks showing up for the very first Olympic Games, and here is the date. This is when Greek history begins. And it's a cool date. I really like it. The first Olympic Games and the beginning of archaic history in Greece comes in 776 BC. So, shouldn't be too hard to remember, right? If we're going to have two anchor facts, one of them is 776 BC. What's that remind you of? Anything? If it doesn't yet, it will in a second. What does it remind you of? What's it similar to, Opal?
1776 AD.
Yeah, right. It's almost the same, right? It's not 1776, but 776, 1776. Right. So I think that's a cool connection to make. It's easy to remember for me. I mean, ever since I first read it, I never forgot it. So hopefully it will be the same way for you as well. Archaic Greek history begins circa 776 BC. It was the first Olympic Games. And we'll see that from now on, we're going to get a pretty steady story. We're going to focus mostly on Athens, of course, because it's the most important place. But we'll see other parts of Greece as well. We'll see how we're going to get from this point to this amazing war between the Greeks and the Persians and why it matters so much. Because along the way, the Athenians will have created the first society that really has a good idea of freedom. So it's going to be fantastic. All right, well, we're at the beginning at least. The story of Greece begins. We know what Greece was like. We know the kind of area it was. We know the separate city-states. We know that they were often at war with each other. But through the Olympics, they celebrated their common Greek culture and that it all begins 776 BC. All right, folks, that will do it for today. Thank you. Talk to you guys tomorrow in History Through Art. Bye.
Bye.